This is Central Time. I'm Veronica Ricker.
And I'm Rob Ferret.
We're getting ready for the Oscars this weekend. On Sunday night, ABC will broadcast the 87th Annual Academy Awards, an event that movie buffs look forward to all year.
David Edelstein is with us to give us his predictions and fill us in on the need-to-know info going into the ceremony. He's the chief film critic for New York Magazine, Vulture.com, and NPR's Fresh Air. David, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, any surprises this year when it came to what films and actors were nominated?
Well, I think was the first thing that came out of people's horrified mouths was that this was the whitest slate of nominees in about maybe since the Civil War. I'm not sure. I'm not sure how far back you can go, and especially given the fact that there was a first-rate film, Selma, that was overlooked in just about every major category except, ironically enough, Best Picture, which was, and I use this term advisedly, a token nomination. I think that David Oyelowo, who played Martin Luther King, gave the best performance of the year, and he wasn't nominated. I think that there was a lot of surprise that American Sniper did as well as it did, and yet there was no nomination for Clint Eastwood. And as the film has become this phenomenon, you know, on par with The Passion of the Christ, more and more people are thinking, hey, you know, if Clint Eastwood had been nominated, he might have had a shot.
Well, the nominations came out a while ago, and then there's this whole lead-up period during which there are sometimes other ceremonies. What happens during that period where we assume people are, you know, rallying around particular causes and people and films? Is there a sort of horse-racy aspect that's going on behind the scenes?
Yeah, thank you for asking me this, because I feel like I forgot. I buried the lead here. I have to give you my standard disclaimer is that, and it's very cynical, and many people will be put off by it, but we are not talking about artistic merit. We are talking about politics. We're talking about the politics of Hollywood. We're talking about, in some cases, liberal politics. In some cases, we're talking about a voting body that I think the average age at this point is above 55 years old. Certainly there's a lot of in the 60 to 80 year old range, overwhelmingly white, disproportionately male. It's a very, very strange and select body. And nowadays, I mean, people go into battle the way they do. You've seen the movie The War Room. Well, a lot of these movies have war rooms, and there are people, I know some of the people who work in them, and they are fantastic at what they do, at getting the nominees to cocktail parties. They're not allowed to pay for formal events, but they can call up somebody and they can say, "Hey, you know, can we bring?" Let's just throw out an example: Patricia Arquette. Oh, she's lovely. Can she come over to your house and can we have a bunch of people here? You know, and you know, just invite some friends, quote unquote, over to meet her. And of course, all the friends happen to be card-carrying members of the Motion Picture Academy, and it's a fascinating, fascinating process. Meanwhile, things are leaked to the. There's this now whole enormous press thing that's come about in the last 10 years. There are full-time so-called Oscarologists, awardologists, self-appointed experts in who's ahead, who's not ahead, and you know, it's all based on nothing. It's actually based on, I can tell you pretty 90%, 95% for sure who's going to win on Sunday. And I don't know anything. I mean, I'm grateful that you're having me on and I have a chance to say, I know who's going to win and I don't know anything. I'm not in Hollywood. I'm not, you know, I don't have, you know, direct lines to a lot of producers and voting members, but I know who's going to win. Because it's all out there. It's really sad.
Well, now that we're all depressed, let's talk about the movies.
Depressed, angry, you know.
Cynical.
There will be some really great performances that win this year. Julianne Moore, this is an example of an Oscar overdue actress meets an Oscar bait role and gives a stupendous performance. And, you know, the odds of her not winning are astronomical. I can't imagine anybody else winning that prize, though there are some wonderful other performances. Marion Cotillard is great, and a movie that I don't think very many people out there saw. By the way, Marion Cotillard, that's an example of what I was talking about before. When she was nominated for her Edith Piaf biopic, must have been 5 or 10 years ago, nobody gave her a shot. Julie Christie was by far the runaway favorite that year for a wonderful film called Away From Her. And Julie Christie didn't want to campaign. She didn't want to come out and press the flesh and go to these parties. Whereas Marianne, oh, I knew her publicist. They were taking her everywhere. And people were seeing how beautiful she was and how charming she was and how different she was from Edith Piaf. And she won. Well, and everybody's jaws dropped.
Well, David, let's set aside the politics and shenanigans for a moment. Let's talk artistic merit. 8 movies up for Best Picture. We'll get into some of them in turn. David, I'm gonna hold you to this. Artistic merit, those 8 movies, which movie should win? Or politics aside.
Well, Boyhood is a great movie. I mean, it's unlike any a fictional movie ever made. It was a labor of love. There are many people. There's been a backlash against it, a very carefully orchestrated backlash, where people are saying it's kind of dull, and people who after the critical onrush, people. But I'm still a Boyhood guy. Boyhood going into the race was the favorite. It's not going to win, I don't think. Although Richard Linklater, oddly enough, the director and writer, might well win because people want to give him something, and that's a pretty good thing to give him. Birdman has really, in all the conversations I've seen with, the whisper conversations I've seen with Academy voters, that everything is turning toward Birdman right now. Birdman is a brilliantly made film. I thought it was awful, but brilliantly made. And I thought it was a pile of cliches and pretensions, but it is a tour de force, technically, in so many ways. It's a movie, when it's over, you just go, whew, wow, and you really want to get up and applaud just the amount of effort that went into this movie.
We've got clips of both of those. So for people who may not have seen them, let's listen to those. We get a little taste of what we're talking about. First, we're going to start with your favorite. You say it's not going to win, but this is a clip from Boyhood.
It might win.
Hey, Mason, what time is it?
Like 12:15.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday!
Mason, it's your birthday?
Just now, I guess.
Yeah, how old are you?
15.
15? Give me a hug. Happy birthday. Oh, my goodness.
And the amazing thing is, this is filmed over, I haven't seen it, I'll be honest, but it's filmed over the course of years with the same actors, aging.
A dozen years with the same actors, yes. It was not improvised. It was very tightly scripted, but it was sort of written on... It was written over the course of a dozen years.
And you said this one sort of changed your whole concept of what a movie was, didn't you?
I did, yes. I felt as if this movie made time visible in a way that I had never... I mean, it literally... I don't know that it literally made it visible, but you saw it... we're used to seeing movies in which you have one actor playing a kid and one actor playing, the kid a little older and one actor playing the character grown up. The way that you were able to follow this movie, I thought, drove home in a way that movies usually don't. The reality of time, the fact that that kid in the first scene is gone, will never be there again. You know, just the way your kid is, will be something else, or my kid, or me, or you. It made that sense of growth and at the same time loss. So visible. It gave the movie such an ache that I was completely overwhelmed by it. And I know a lot of people who were. But I also, people come up to me all the time and say, I don't know. It was kind of boring. It didn't have a, conventional story arc. It does have this extraordinary Patricia Arquette performance, though. And she's definitely going to win. I can't imagine anybody else taking that from her. They love her out there. She's had no plastic surgery. Oh, my God. There are so many people who are so excited to give this to somebody with no plastic surgery who's over 40.
And then you mentioned Birdman, a likely winner, though you think it shouldn't be. A quick listen to that.
Are you afraid people will say you're doing this play to battle the impression that you're a washed-up comic strip character?
Absolutely not. That's why 20 years ago I said no to Birdman 4.
Now, you, in your review of this movie, said, hey, this is Michael Keaton. We've seen better from Michael Keaton.
Oh, what a line to pick out. I love Michael Keaton. And I wait a minute. He's fine in this movie. He's good in this movie. He's going to win. But, I mean, I've seen him, you know, we know he's got so much energy. We know he can play edgy. We know he can play characters who are full of self-pity. All of that he does beautifully here. There are performances. I mean, this is the guy who gave us Beetlejuice. This guy is capable of flying much higher than he does in Birdman. But I think the fact that Michael Keaton, and again, all these other things besides artistic merit come into the picture. Michael Keaton is a guy who, really at the height of his fame, kind of wandered away. You know, he was much more interested in being on his ranch. Some people hated him for that, but people also think, okay, you know, he's got issues, he's not a Hollywood creature, you know, he's come back and he's putting himself in a way on trial in this movie. And, you know, we ought to recognize him for that. They think it's a career summing up performance.
We're talking to film critic David Edelstein. He's carefully guarding his opinions as regards the Oscars, the Academy Awards coming up this Sunday evening.
And we want to hear from you on this. Who do you think is going to win big at the Oscars this Sunday? And among the nominees, what was your favorite film? Are you planning to watch the Academy Awards? And, you know, we've heard a little bit about some of the backstage politics there. Does that matter to you? Or are you just going to watch it for the glamour and the ceremony? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll continue the conversation and take your calls in a minute after a look at the news with Noah Ovshinsky. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We're picking up our discussion now with film critic David Edelstein about the upcoming Oscars.
And we're taking your calls, maybe your predictions, questions at 800-642-1234. Who do you think will win the awards on Sunday? Who do you think should win? How are you planning to watch the Oscars? Do you have a big Oscar party or sit home alone or, I don't know, skip the whole affair? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And we go to our callers. Now we've got Melissa on the line from Delafield. Melissa, hi.
Hi. I just know what your guest thought about the movie Whiplash.
Okay, good question. Whiplash. This is one that's got some nominees on the board. What did you think about this one, David?
Well, I love the movie Whiplash. It's a very young director, Damien Chazelle. And to me, the film, first of all, I've never seen a film in which the camera has so caught the spirit of the music that was being played. It was like that this movie was not nominated for cinematography, you know, when it just, the camera seemed to dance with the music. A lot of people were angry about the movie because it seems to imply that only a truly sadistic, monstrous teacher can turn, you know, a kind of formless young man into a real artist. That, in other words, you need to be abused and driven in order to be a great artist. I'm not sure that's what it's saying, but that's how a lot of people have interpreted it. I think it's a lot more open. Anyway, I love the movie. It's not going to win Best Picture. J.K. Simmons, I think, will win for Best Supporting Actor. He plays the teacher. If you know him, of course, from Oz and Law and Order, and he's just a magnificent-looking guy. You know, there's, like, no adipose tissue on him, no fat. He's like all bald head and tight skin and sinew and, you know, nastiness. I mean, he's really a Hollywood ideal.
And David, you know, I want to ask you, I didn't see this one, but I did see the trailer, and it's one that at first seemed intriguing, but as I sat through the trailer, I found myself just cringing through the entire trailer. What was it like to see the entire movie?
It's a horror movie. In a lot, I mean, it's sort of like if you can imagine the most sadistic drill sergeant. I mean, you could call it a psychodrama, but the intensity of it is unbelievable. I mean, I came out of that movie shaking. Mm-hmm. I still loved it, though. I still think it's a real achievement, and that Damien Chazelle is a terrific guy. He's probably going to win. Here's an example. Now, you want to talk about absurdity. You know, there are two categories of screenplay. There's adapted screenplay and original screenplay. Well, by anyone's definition except the Academy's, Whiplash is an original screenplay. However, in order to make the feature, Damien Chazelle made a short Whiplash film that he brought around and showed to money people in order to get the money. So they claim that his screenplay for the feature film was based on his short film. So now he's running in the category of, like, you know, side by side with people who, you know, adapted, you know, great novels. You know, he adapted the screenplay.
His own screenplay.
His own kind of audition thing. He's probably going to win that category. That's the amazing thing.
Wow.
Let's go back to another caller. We've got Jerry on the line in Milwaukee. Jerry, hi.
Hi. I loved the American Sniper, I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, Bradley Cooper is such a good-looking young man, and when you see him and you know who he is, but in this movie, he became that character. And throughout the movie, I never once thought, oh, good-looking Bradley Cooper. I just thought, oh, my God, he's the sniper. It was a riveting performance and a very good movie, I thought.
Jerry, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. David Edelstein, American Sniper, you mentioned a little more on Bradley Cooper and his performance.
I could not agree more with the caller about his performance. We're not used to seeing Bradley Cooper like this. The transformation is complete. He plays a guy who is rock hard and yet at the same time manages to convey horror, vulnerability, sadness, the kind of the loneliness of the great warrior. I had all kinds of problems with the film, with the timeline of the film, with certain things it left out, with certain of its implications, and believe me, having said that, I got hundreds, if not more, of the sorts of emails I couldn't read on radio. But I will say that I would not be surprised if Bradley Cooper, if there were going to be a surprise at the Oscars, it could be that there is enough respect for what Bradley Cooper did and for what the movie accomplished that he could conceivably win for Best Actor. And you know what? I wouldn't be upset at all. Probably of the five performances there, I'd vote for his.
That's interesting because this is one of the categories where the race does seem genuinely tight. It's not like the Patricia Arquette category that you say is a runaway. A lot of people are really in love with Eddie Redmayne's portrayal of Stephen Hawking, for instance, and we've got a clip of that. Let's take a listen.
There should be no boundary to human endeavor. However bad life may seem, while there is life, there is hope.
And Eddie Redmayne bringing to life the life of Stephen Hawking, the life and love. What do you think about that performance?
It's an amazing performance. It is so great, and it's one of those cases where he's able, you know, even as the body kind of twists as he becomes, you know, Stephen Hawking had what we, you know, popularly known as Lou Gehrig's disease, and he, you know, the intellect, the anger shines out so fiercely as his body kind of twists into a pretzel and seems incapable of movement. It's really just the kind of movie that the Academy, kind of performance the Academy usually recognizes. And in fact, for a long time, he's been the front runner. And many people think it's between him and Michael Keaton. I think the movie itself is pretty lousy. I think the second half of it, especially, is a mess. It's really more about the marriage of these two characters, and it's based on the memoir of Hawking's wife. And I just don't think dramatically it adds up in any way that is terribly interesting or illuminative of either person. So he may be hurt by the movie. I don't know.
Well, another Best Actor nominee, Benedict Cumberbatch, known as Sherlock Holmes and Khan, I guess, for The Imitation Game, which I think was also up for Best Picture, if I remember correctly.
Oh, The Imitation Game is like a textbook Oscar bait biopic. it was you know, handcrafted, I think, by Harvey Weinstein, who is the Oscar bait, you know, is the great Oscar bait mogul, perhaps of this new century. The man has a real instinct for what people are going to vote for, and you know, and he hires great people to go out and campaign. The movie, There have been a lot of, as with all of these nominees, there have been a lot of people who have said this film takes so many liberties with its subject that, you know, it doesn't even, you know, it's almost a violation of it's almost a violation of this man and what he really did achieve. And I think that 20 years ago, that might not have mattered all that much. But now with the Internet pounding home this message day after day after day, you know, American Sniper, you know, distorts the facts. Selma distorts LBJ's role. You know, the Imitation Game, you know, is an insult to Alan Turing. You can't always anticipate some of these currents and countercurrents.
That's an interesting case to make. I saw that movie not knowing all of the historical ins and outs that you're referring to, and it was kind of a mind blower for me. I thought it was great.
Well, first of all, it's an absolutely gorgeously made and constructed movie. It doesn't bear too much relation to the fact that, look, if it's a launching pad for you to look into the career of Alan Turing, you may be surprised to know that there were other people at Bletchley Park who worked on solving this code, quite a few, in fact, that a lot of the characters did not do things that that the movie says it does. And there's also a really interesting thing, because Alan Turing there's a character, a Soviet spy who's in Bletchley Park working on his team, and he successfully blackmails Alan Turing into keeping quiet using his knowledge of Turing's homosexuality. Now, that is that not only did that not happen, but that's the traditional reason, that was the often stated reason for barring gays from any kind of higher government service, that they were too prone to blackmail. Now, the fact that they put this in the movie, they made this thing up and put it in the movie, I think is a legitimate source of outrage for a lot of people. Turing was much more open, you know, acknowledged much more openly his sexuality than he's shown in the movie. Some people think they de-gayed him, you know. They went easy on that for fear of alienating who? Academy voters, among others.
Well, David, we'll leave it there until Sunday night. Thanks so much for joining us.
Well, I hope I haven't brought everybody's down. It's still going to be a wonderful performance. I mean, you're still going to see the crazy, glamorous people, you know, exhibitionists doing very bizarre things.
All right. David Edelstein is chief film critic for New York Magazine and Vulture.com and NPR's Fresh Air.
I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network.